Terrence Pop here with another episode of Live from the Lair! And today I'm going to be doing a little update on the Ukraine situation. Now, as we all know, they've been duking it out now for almost 2 weeks. Alright, and just like I predicted when this first started, if the Ukraine was able to stall the Russian forces long enough, you'd start seeing what's happening now. The Russians, their momentum is for the most part stalled, and the gains they're making now are a slog, and they're being resisted at every turn. So, I don't know who Putin had in his staff, you know, recommending this course of action, because I think Putin is the victim of having a staff of yes men that tell you what you want to hear. They don't tell you the truth. And now the Russian forces are, and the Ukraine are, paying the price.
Have you ever wondered what a world run by leftoids would look like? It would be a living nightmare.
All employees with a criminal record are now entered into the lottery. The winners are allowed the honor of sacrificing their lives to decrease CO2 emissions.
People are okay with that?
But it turns out that the best way to stave off Marxism is to mock it relentlessly and creatively with movies like Tag Conspiracy.
And now, with only a 15 to 20% discharge error rate.
Whistleblower Brett Mauser is back with his most hilarious and cinematic effort to date. And you can support free speech films like this by going to notsosane.com.
Wow, let's do this!
Rent or buy a copy today. A link is in the Meat Gazer box.
All right, now this is a map here. This is 3 days old. Let me go here and show it. All right, there has been some gains made in the past 3 days, but it's really, really slim. All right, they're starting to get that stranglehold here on Kiev and Kharkiv over here. Is that, yeah, these are the two major cities that are getting hammered at this time. And Crimea has come forward and grabbed most of this territory here. And as you can see, they're trying to move their way forward, and I believe that, you know, they wanted the whole country, but I think they want to unite these two forces, and then I think they will have to try to get a ceasefire and keep half of this, of the Ukraine. Now, the reason I'm saying that is, a lot of the vehicles that were in these depots were not maintained properly. There's a lot of equipment that's failing. And the fact that they had, let's say, somewhere between 65% of their force in a convoy moving into the country that was stalled for multiple days. And this has really put a bind on the amount of fuel they have and can use. So, you know, we have fuel problems, we have maintenance issues, there's a command and control problem, and most of that stems from the confusion between conscript units and their active duty frontline units that are not made of conscripts. Historically, conscript armies are slow to react. They put forth a minimum effort. And to make them do anything, you have to have whip crackers standing over them to make sure it happens. Now, when everything gets spread out and you don't have that happening, no one's there cracking the whip over the conscripts, this is what you see. This is warfare being waged at a 60% standard. Okay, so basically these conscripts are engaging, you know, 6 out of 10 Ukrainians. And in my opinion, they're just trying to get through it to get over it. All right, so that's the map right there. Stand by on the next one. Okay. Now, there's been a lot of rumor control out there that the Ukrainian government is shooting its own people. and tries to get them out of a war zone. Now, this takes place, for the most part, to the west of Ukraine, where they had the few provinces that are majority Russian-speaking, who wanted to basically become part of Russia. And since 2014, Zelensky has been bombing and, you know, basically applying artillery to the individuals in that portion of, quote-unquote, his country. Like I said before, there is no black and white here. Our media is trying to, you know, paint Ukraine as the white knights and Russia as the black knights doing evil shit. In my opinion, they're both in different shades of gray. Now, granted, Russia started this whole thing by, you know, coming into the border. But I think moving forward, you know, as more news comes out, we're going to find out a lot more dirt of what's been going on in the Ukraine. And there's a lot of scuttlebutt about bioweapon labs and vaccine testing on Ukrainian troops. And we have members of our own government who own buildings over there and have members of their family on the Ukrainian boards for, you know, energy, which is absolutely stupid. It's not just our stunning and brave Richard Potato in charge, but individuals from the Democratic Party who have sons that are doing the same thing. And we'll probably do a story on it later on, but it needs to be spoken about. And I'm, to be honest with you, I'm expecting hackers of, you know, I don't even know which hackers would do this. Anonymous, I know there's a whole bunch of hackers out there just making trouble for Ukraine and Russia. And when that happens, you can probably expect to see a large spill of information into the public domain in the next 1 to 6 months. This is another journalist who's speaking about inside, you know, eastern Ukraine. I believe that's, yeah, that's where the two provinces wanted to pull away from the Ukraine. And the people in those areas are grateful Russia's finally doing something. There's a video here. This is basically, you can find this on RAIRfoundation.com. RAIRfoundation.com. And it talks all about the crazy shit that's going on. They even have, they're accusing Zelensky of being a Nazi, you know, neo-Nazi kind of regime. Now, it's hard to determine who's right, who's wrong, because there's the fog of war going on, and everyone and their mothers is basically doing propaganda. You got Ukraine doing their version of propaganda. You have the Russians doing theirs. And then you have the Western nations. And then you have the United States. All of them are putting forward different stories. So it's going to be really hard to determine who's telling the truth. And in the future, moving on, as more information comes to light, you use logic and reason, and you can pretty much shine right through the fog of their propaganda. So I'm going to go through shoulder-fired weapons that are now flooding into the Ukraine. Okay, this includes Stinger missiles from various, basically, shoulder-fired anti-aircraft missiles. The ones from the United States are called Stingers. And Ukraine has received anti-tank and anti-aircraft missiles from virtually every nation that touches them that's part of NATO. Okay, and to include ones that aren't even there, like Spain, the Netherlands, England, France. So this is going to get lively, and this is going to change the doctrine of warfare moving forward. Okay, the massive amounts of artillery and air cover and the armor advantage don't seem to be having the crushing results of the lightning wars of the past. And a lot of that is because the shoulder-fired man-pad missiles are disrupting the total air superiority that Russia wanted over the skies of Ukraine. Those MANPAD missiles go up to 15,000 feet. Now, I'm going to be honest, those are just the numbers that are released to the public. I would add 20% onto that. So basically, you'd be safe to assume at least the United States MANPAD missiles probably have an upper ceiling of somewhere around 20 to 22,000 feet and probably an additional two clicks in range on their on their rocket motors. You can find a lot of this information open source online, but as a former, 18 Bravo, I've looked at the official pamphlets of what the weapon can do, and I've looked at the pamphlets that were released to the general public, and they were not the same. So I'm assuming that is probably the case here as well. All right, I'm not gonna go through all this right now. This is on the Dive, thedrive.com, thedrive.com. And here's some pictures of the missiles that are being shipped over. Now, what I really, as a side note, I used to love getting my hands on the storage containers for stuff like this, because I would use it for all kinds of cool stuff. Because most of the time, you take the warhead out, you throw away the dunnage, and it just sits there and does nothing. That's very useful stuff, especially for insurgents. They can basically cache equipment, ammo, what have you, put it in these containers and bury it, and it'll probably be good for up to 5 years, maybe longer, depending upon what they're made of and how much water is in the ground and how cold it gets. All right, MANPADs. We got the FIM-92 Stinger. All right, when everyone says, shoulder-fired anti-aircraft missiles, the first thing people say is Stingers. Okay, there are a lot of different types of Stingers, and they started making them in roughly 1981, and they have gotten better ever since then. I believe a lot of the Stingers that were originally given to the Ukraine were right on the cusp of expiring, so those were probably made in the neighborhood of the 2005 to 2010 range, because typically they don't like to keep this stuff on the shelf more than 10 years, because there are components that oxidize and cause it to become extremely unreliable. Now, this defect is, I saw this a lot more in Iraq with the SA-7s and SA-14 systems that were all over Iraq. They were old. They were used against incoming landing aircraft at Victory. It's just the missiles lost their ability to track, and a lot of times they would fire out of the missile, and then there's safeties built in where the missile explodes at minimum arming distance because there's too many defects going on within the circuits, and it's just a built-in safety measure. Now, not all shoulder-fired rockets or anti-aircraft missiles have that. But they started putting it in there, just for shits and giggles. Because guess what? You want your missile to go to the target you aim it at. And in today's day and age, if your missile isn't capable of doing that, it does something else, it can cause an international incident, and there'll be all kinds of problems. That's probably one of the reasons why they've decided, to put that those kind of safety measures into these different missiles. All right, I'm not going to go through this whole thing. These are different anti-aircraft constructions. Now, they're coming from all over. Okay, we have the Grom. This is basically an Eastern Bloc missile, and Poland basically sent a lot of these over there. Again, these are probably a little older missiles. The newer stuff will come as it's needed, and if the country is willing to part with those missiles, we shall see. Okay, it doesn't really go into the Grom's maximum ceiling, but I can assume if it was made in the past 10 years, which as a gambling man, I'm betting probably most of these missiles were made between 15 and 10 years ago. So it's probably pretty close to the Stinger, because let's face it, if you make a good product, people copy it, or they take it and tweak it a little bit to make it their own design, and there you go. It happens all the time. Okay, here's the Strela and the Eigla. These are from Germany. And these are, they're sending over basically 2,700 Soviet-era heat-seeking Sierra series man pads. Now, I am basically going to tell you that these are probably not going to work. They're long since expired. And even if they do work, a lot of these, you know, if the aircraft is dropping flares, they're going to be virtually ineffective. I'm sure they'll still get some hits, but it won't be like the newer level stuff. Now, don't get me wrong. There's a way you can use these missiles to get a tactical advantage, even though you know they're probably not going to work. Well, basically, every aircraft has some type of radar on it. And if it's coming into the battle space to drop some heat on your soldiers, and you have these missiles in your inventory, you basically squeeze a couple off. The aircraft don't know they're old and aren't going to work. And this will really fuck with their patterns to come in and drop ordnance. Because I'm going to tell you right now, I've spoken to a lot of pilots. And coming in below, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 feet to drop ordnance is a risky game with direct fire weapons. And it becomes even more of a nightmare with guided munitions. So it could cause a lot of flinching on the enemy side. It's basically a bluff. But bluffs work in poker, and they work in life, and they work in war. Okay. Now we're talking about the Javelin here. Now the Javelin is fucking a super effective platform. I've fired it. I've seen it used. And to be honest, the Russians know the Javelin is incredibly effective, because you're starting to see a lot of cages and blocking plates being welded on top of the tanks. Now, I do not know if those will be effective, because the Javelin has a tandem warhead. The first one is designed to set off reactive armor, and then the warhead behind it is the one that does all the damage. So that first warhead will probably blow a hole in whatever material on top of the tank is used to block it. And then the tandem warhead will basically blast through that and, you know, take the tank out, if not cripple it. Okay, we got the NLAW, which is the next generation anti-tank weapon system. I personally haven't messed with this at all. It kind of looks similar to a Dragon to me. But, or an AT-4, I'm not really familiar with this weapon system, other than the fact it probably has the same penetration and capabilities as the newer AT-4s. Meaning, it has an extended range, it'll go through more armor, and you can set different settings on the warhead for, like, anti-vehicle, anti-building, or bunker. So it has an effective range of 26, 25 feet. Divide that by 3, it's like 1200 meters ish. It's not bad, just almost a mile. Now these, unless it's guided, guided anti-tank weapons, you can fire at those distances. If it's not guided, you're going to have to get closer, like 300 to 500 meters, if not closer than that. And whenever you get that close to, big rolling tanks that can run you over and make you sound like a box of saltine crackers, and has weapons that'll shoot through pretty much anything you can hide behind, it gets pretty dicey. Carl Gustav came into the inventory just before I ETS'd out of the 2nd Ranger Battalion. We were just starting to use it like the last 5 months I was there, and it was replacing the 90mm recoilless rifle. Now, this particular caller, Gustav, I do not believe it has guided ammunition nor fire and forget ammo. I believe it's a direct fire round that, you know, can take out medium and light vehicles. They used it on bunkers, they used it on buildings, and they even have anti-personnel missiles. This thing is incredibly useful, and it has flares and smoke as well. This is a very, very good weapon system, and I'm glad it's getting sent over to the Ukraine. All right, here's a picture of all the different types of rounds that can be used. I'm not going to go through them all. Okay, Canada is sending some stuff. I don't know if they're sending the Carl Gustav. Let's look. Yeah, let's see. It's a Swiss. Oh, Canada's sending it to them. So it's a Swiss-made Carl Gustav. And Canada is sending them all those systems, which those are pretty good systems. And they're not super pricey because they're old. But, you know, hey, Canada, they don't really do a lot of fighting. And it is what it is. Now, here we have the AT-4. Okay. 5,000 of these have been sent over there. And it's a Swedish-designed weapon. We have a whole ass load of them. I jumped one of these into Panama along with some LAW rockets. And they did quite well. I believe I dropped off my AT-4 and two LAW rockets at the when I got to the assembly area, along with all my other crap, because I was basically a walking ammo pallet. And it was used, I believe, on some vehicles around the compound. I myself did not fire any of these at enemy vehicles, so I missed out on that chance. But I have fired quite a few AT-4s, LAW rockets. I've fired a couple tow missiles, a couple javelins. Fired, what is it, about a dozen anti-aircraft shoulder-fired missiles in my career. And I've done a lot of training on these systems. And they're pretty goddamn scary. Now, you see this picture here? They have an ANPVS-4 night vision scope mounted on the side of this weapon. I would say when you fire this, this whole tube here is expendable. So you just drop it and leave it. But, you know, in the heat of battle, some of these guys might actually leave this piece of equipment behind. Because let's face it, when adrenaline's pumping and shit's going crazy, the little details here will fall through the cracks. This is not a good idea, in my opinion. Here's the Panzerfaust III. This one has a range of 1,300 to 1,900 feet, which is like 800 to 1,200 meters. No, actually, that's 400 to 600, 700 meters. Okay, there's a picture of that. Now, listen, all of these missiles getting dropped off for Ukraine to use, it's changing how we're going to conduct warfare moving forward. All right? Because when you have this many missiles on the ground, your vehicles become incredibly vulnerable, and they're going to have to try to come up with a way to beat that. Here we go, the M72 anti-tank light armor, the LAW. You know, I trained on this in basic training. I've fired, I don't know, 100, 150 of these, and probably a 1,000, 2,000 of the training missiles. It's a good system. It's good for light vehicles. And if you volley fire on a heavier armored vehicle, yes, you're probably not going to penetrate the armor. But, you know, you get four, five, six guys volley firing on a tank from the side, you can easily get a mobility kill by, you know, destroying the road wheels or having it throw a track. And if you're lucky and you land anywhere near the breech of the chamber, you can damage the actual main gun and take it out of play. Let's see what else they got here. Okay, armor-piercing infantry light arm system. This is another, I think this one is from France. It's basically another version of an AT-4. And then this one here is from Spain. Again, it's another version of an AT-4. All right. Here's another Spanish one here. The C90 looks very similar to an AT4. So, like I said before, this is going to get ugly moving forward. Here's some headlines here from UKRA News. Okay, we have Russia tries possibility of ceasefire. We'll see. Russia sabotage and reconnaissance groups are infiltrating Kiev and other major cities, and they're looking for military targets that are being stored near civilian, you know, basically civilian buildings. And this is very common. They will do this to protect their assets from artillery and air attack, and they hide behind the population. Every army does this to a certain extent. Okay, that's just the way it is. We even did it in Baghdad to keep our tanks and, you know, logistic vehicles from getting hammered. All right, so you're going to see a lot of low-level fighting as these groups are basically identified, and the Ukrainians will try to pin them in place to kill and capture them. That's how war is. That is how war is conducted. Now you see here, the Russian troops are now identifying themselves with yellow ribbons, like Ukraine troops are. This is, you know, this is under fog of war and causing confusion on the ground. All right. Now technically, this is against the Geneva Convention. But, you know, since Ukraine is not part of NATO, I don't know if it's, I don't know if they're going to follow the Geneva Convention the way it should be followed. And this is going to turn into a long, drawn-out, brutal slog. All right, now here we have Russia seriously considering blowing up ammonia warehouse in Kharkiv region to blame Ukrainian armed forces. All right, now, for those of you that don't know, this portion of the world creates a lion's share of the fertilizer for the world, and they make a good share of grain that feeds, you know, half the globe. So, you know, we're going to see food shortages at a minimum for the next 2 to 3 years because of this, no matter what happens. And if this conflict continues to move along, it's just going to get worse. All right, that's all I'm going to go through on that one. I don't want to burn through all of them here. Okay, again, war in Ukraine, high-level talks between Russia and Ukraine fail to make progress. This is a shocker. Basically, Putin wants the Ukraine to agree to never become part of NATO or, you know, or join any other block of nations that stand against Russia. That's why I believe at a bare minimum, you know, instead of withdrawing the forces completely, Russian forces from Ukraine, they're going to try to go north and just take half the country and just call it good. And then they're going to take a long time to retrain their military and refit it, because what they're doing or what they thought was going to work isn't. It's fucking brutal. Okay, now this is Russia's economy is taking a huge, huge hit. Their stock market has been closed since the end of February, and a lot of people are getting the fuck out of Dodge. And the Russians basically want to step in and endorse a plan to nationalize foreign-owned businesses that flee the country over its invasion of Ukraine. This is typical communist fucking type of bullshit. And this really, you know, I don't approve of this at all. Because I'm going to be honest, I think the world has had enough of communism. And if Russia is going to continue to use communist and socialist policies, they're going to get painted in that light, and it will not be good for them moving forward. Especially if they do anything like fucking way out of hand, they might not ever recover.